Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Right side of my mind. I get locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let me out.
I'm locked up.
They won't let me out.
No.
They won't let me out.
I'm locked up. Down to Rio, back with a couple peeps. Corner blocks on fire, undercovers dressed as thieves. Making so much money, products moving fast. Put away the cash, as I sold the last bag. Fucked around and got locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let me out.
Locked up.
They won't let me out. No.
They won't let me out.
They won't let me out.
They won't let me out.
No. They won't let me out.
Visitation no longer comes by. Seems like they forgot about me. Commissary is getting empty. Cellmates eating food without me. Can't wait to get out and move forward with my life. Got a family that loves me and wants me to do right. But instead I get locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let me out.
I'm locked up.
They won't let me out. No. They won't let me out.
My nigga, I'm locked up.
They won't let me out.
Platform breaking the stigma on mental health in ourselves, families, and communities one conversation at a time. With host LaWanda Chambers, licensed professional counselor, aka your therapist's favorite therapist, putting care back into you and the community. Black Sister Talk is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Radio Network and is broadcasted on the Blog Talk Radio platform.
Letter from Nas,
yeah,
man.
Tell us what it say, man.
Listen, What up, kid? I know this is rough doing your bit. When the cops came, you should have slid to my crib. Black, no time for looking back is done. Plus, congratulations, you know you got a son. I heard he looks like you. Why don't your lady write you? Told her she could visit, that's when she got hyper. Flipping, talking about he act too rough. He didn't listen, he be ripping while I'm telling him stuff. I was like, yeah, shorty don't care. She a snake too, messing with the plums from that fake crew that hates you. But yo, guess who got shot in the dome piece? Jerome's niece on her way home from Jones Beach's club. Plus little Rob is selling drugs on the dime, hanging out with young thugs that all carry nines. And nighttime is more tripe than ever. What up with poor Mega? Did you see him or y'all together? If so, then hold the fort down, represent to the fullest. Say what's up to Herb, Ice, and Bullets. I left for half a hundred in your commissary. You was my driving when push came to shove.
One what?
One love.
One love. One love. One love.
Check out the story yesterday when I was walking. The kid get shot last year, try to appear like he hurt something. Word him up, I heard him fronting, and he be pumping on your block. Your man gave him your block, and now they run together. What up, son, whatever. Since I'm on the streets, I'ma put it to a cease. But I heard you push a body with an ox for the phone piece. Wildin' on the Allen, but now with Elmira, better chill, cause the life is real. Put that ass on fire. Last time you wrote, you said they tried you in the showers. But maintain when you come home, the corner's hours on the rails. Crap crews know the deal. When we start the revolution, all they probably do is squeal. But chill, see you on the next VI. I gave you my Duke's loop for kicks, plus into flicks. Your brother's butt wildin' in Fort Maine. He wrote me, he might be the taste till he come home, I'm playing low key. So stay civilized, time flies, no incarcerated, your mind dies. I hate it when your mom's drop. It kinda makes me wanna murder, for realer. I even got a mask and gloves to bust slugs for one love.
One love, one love.
Minds in another world, thinking how can we exist through the facts written in school textbooks, Bibles, etc. Also a school lecture, the lies get me vexed up. So I be ghost for my projects. I take my pen and pad for the weekend while I'm sleeping. A 2-day stay, you may say I needed time alone to relax my dome. No phone left and not at home. You see the streets had me stressed, something terrible. Dealing with the corners, have a guard up in Bellevue at HDM. Hit with numbers from 8 to 10. A future in a maximum state pen. It's grim, so I comes back home. Nobody got what shorty do out. Rolling two hoes together in the bridge, we call them oops. He said, nah, somebody called me busting off the roof. So I wear a bulletproof, a pack of black trade deuce. He inhaled so deep, shut his eyes like he was sleep. Started coughing when I peeked to watch me speak. I sat back like the Mac, my army suit was black. We was chilling on these benches where he pumped his loose. I took the and when he passed it, this little bastard keeps me blasted and starts talking madness. I had to school him, told him don't let brothers fool him. Cause when the pistol blows, the one that's murder be the cool one. Tough luck when people just struck families hooked up. Could've caught your man but didn't look when you bucked up. Mistakes happen, so take heed, never bust up at the crowd. Cause some solo make the right man bleed. Shorty's laugh was cold-blooded as he spoke so foul. Only 12 trying to tell me that he liked myself. And I rose, wiping up his ass from my clothes and froze. Only to blow the earth smoke through my nose and told my little man I'm a ghost, I bros. Left some jewels in his soul that he could sell if he chose. Words of wisdom from now, try to rise up above. Keep an eye out for Dick, shorty, rock one love.
Happy Saturday, everyone, and I apologize for the difficulty we were experiencing as we began our show today. However, it would not be a Black Sister Talk show if I did not give you guys the proper introduction. So, again, thank you for being with us. You know how technology is. We always have a little challenge here and there, but we're not going to let that stop us because this is some very, very powerful information we need to share today, and we will be sharing it. So, happy Saturday, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Black Sister Talk, where you can breathe, the community therapy platform. I am Ms. Wanda, your therapist, favorite therapist, giving you another unfiltered, candid conversation. I am so happy to have another opportunity to intrigue, provoke thought, and lift someone up today, and hope that you are able to learn something from this show that's going to help you in your future. I want to give a quick disclaimer. If you're new to the Black Sister community, I welcome you. I want you to know that you can be safe and yourself. This is a space created for Black women to breathe. You do the same. No need to have it all figured out. I'm here to help you recognize the light within you and want you to see yourself shine the way that I do. So, ladies, let's be free. Sisters, I know that this topic will hit home in several ways as it is a key piece in our battle against racial disparities and the breakdown in our families. I have with us today Ms. Rachel Campbell, who will lead us in our discussion on wrongful convictions. As the post stated earlier, researchers focus on three types of crimes where Black people were more than likely than whites to be exonerated: murder, sexual assault, and drug crimes. While they acknowledge that the causes of each exoneration differ sharply from one type of crime to another, they also said they found patterns of racial discrimination in all three groups. According to researchers, innocent Blacks are 7 times more likely to be convicted of murder than innocent white people. Homicide rates among Black people are higher than those among white people. Innocent Black people are therefore more likely to get suspected and convicted of murder. Wow. Wow. What a mouthful. What a mouthful. And how grateful I am today to have Ms. Rachel on the show leading us in this discussion, as she has several years of experience on this topic, but also comes with a wealth of other knowledge, such as studying as a paralegal, being a business administrator of human resource management, and an avid natural science student of life and nature. She is a certified ethnobotanist. And my God, today, when I found that out, I got so excited because this lady, when having a conversation with Ms. Rachel for the first time, we had an inception of conversations. We had just, it was like my sister, when you see your sister and you're like, wow, I am you, you are me. We are her. We are one. We connected on such an amazing level. And I want to share my gift with the audience of Ms. Rachel Campbell. I'm going to add her in on the line, and I'm going to ask that Ms. Rachel share a little bit more about herself, because trust me, I just met Ms. Rachel, and I am not doing her just due. So I want her to go ahead and properly introduce herself. How are you doing, Ms. Rachel?
Peace and blessings. Peace and blessings. I am very well. Am I surprised?
Yes, Ms. Rachel. Hey, ladies. Ms. Rachel?
Yes,
can
ma'am.
Can you hear me? Okay,
yes,
perfect.
Ma'am.
Ladies, I am going to have your mic muted for right now. It's going to just be Rachel and I for the first bit of the show, and what we're going to do is we're going to open the lines up a little bit later so you guys can ask questions and provide any feedback you would like to share. Okay, Ms. Rachel, how you doing today?
As I extend the same to you, I pray that all is well with you and the family. Thank you very kindly for having me on as a guest today. I'm honored to be here in the presence of all the Black sisters as we build and share our stories and talk about the pain. But thank you very kindly. I'm blessed. How are you, sis?
Oh, I am doing well. And again, I am so happy that we had an opportunity to meet Miss Rachel. We met through my cousin, Shalette, who is the owner of Aspiring Hearts. And it was just a genuine connection, as well as my cousin Janae. I can't forget Janae out, who is the JS credit specialist. So if any of you guys need any help getting your credit repaired, my cousin got your back, okay? My cousin got your back, so check her out, JS credit specialist. But, yeah, Rachel and I, we connected probably about a month ago now. And ever since we had that one conversation, we have just been powerhousing through things and brainstorming and figuring out how we wanted to get this information. But we originally met to have this discussion about wrongful convictions, and I found out a lot about, a lot of information Ms. Rachel has about wrongful convictions and fighting. We always wonder, who is fighting for us? Who is doing the work that we are not even privy to? Well, here today you're going to hear from one of our soldiers, one of our soldiers that's out here on the battlefield, on the front line, and doing the work because it's her heart and her passion. So just take your pens out, get your pads out, get your sticky notes out, or if y'all like me, whatever loop envelope that's nearby, go ahead and make great use of a tree, because this is going to be a conversation you're going to want to take some notes on, so you can learn how to take action out in your communities and figure out how to union and develop your groups and talk to people about fighting for the issues that you find matter the most to you in your neighborhood. So, Ms. Rachel, go ahead, honey. The floor is yours. I am handing the mic over to you, and I am now a student sitting back at my desk with my pen and pad as well. I am not above learning. And I don't know everything, but that's why I bring all of these very knowledgeable people on the show, because they are also experts in their fields, while I'm an expert in mine. And when we link up, we do great things. So let's learn and humble ourselves so we can grow together. So grateful for you, Rachel. Take us away.
God's blessings. God's blessings. Once again, I thank you, sister, for allowing me to be a special guest along with JNS Credit Specialist, my sponsor, Janae Sampson, the CEO. And I'd like to give a special thanks to all the wonderful people who are present for this special presentation today as we deal with the racial trauma that the community, the Black community, is faced with. So piggybacking off of what you said, I'll just finish doing a brief introduction of who Rachel Campbell am. I am Rachel E. Campbell, the CEO and founder of several entities, but the first one that I will be addressing right now would be Basset Cheetah City Watchers, where I am the Channel 7 Black News. And I serve as a news reporting entity for Black truth, you know, the truth that has not and that is not being spoken about. I think that there are some things that the Black community need to address as it relates to our trauma. And there's so many different things that it is that we have to address. So for me, I deal with racism. And racial disparities as it relates to the criminal justice system, racial disparities as it relates to the overall disenfranchisement of my people, of Black people. So my background is I studied as a paralegal. However, I've been spending 33 years studying through Black's Laws Dictionary, always wanting to be a defense attorney as a young girl. And I just always had a problem with the system. So I never moved forward with going to school to be a lawyer. So I have experience with going to school, studying as a paralegal. I have worked in a couple of legal legal aid, community legal aid divisions throughout the country, you know, not spending a lot of extensive years inside of there, but, you know, having a chance to work directly with lawyers. I do have communication with lawyers that don't serve to be criminal lawyers, however. You know, I do have relationships with them. I have a degree inside of business management and human resources, so I come with a diversified of experiences as it relates with dealing with different types of laws. I deal with labor laws as well as contractual laws. I am a community advocate. I have a legal team of people that I work with. One, God rest her soul, she has passed away, but she had been dealing with looking and reading over legal documents for the community for well over, I'd like to say, about 40 years. So I don't have 40 years experience in doing that, but I've been bringing my experience to the community for about 20 years and in contingent and with joint leadership with my mentors. So with that being said, it's not really about me. It's just really about me bringing this message for what God has brought for me to deliver with some things that's going on. Bastet Sheet of City Watchers is I focus on racism, and I have a 13-point solution in which I feel the Black community have to address to get ourselves healed and separated from different outside and external entities. One of my 13-point solutions of equity deals with the prison system, and what I found is that the 13th Amendment is something that I'm going to be breaking down for you guys today to see and show how we have such a high rate of mass incarceration of Black and brown men, even for that matter. So I'm focusing on a project that I have under my Black Solutions with the prisoners. What I felt is what we need to do as a community is to raise awareness of where the injustice is actually taking place, and the injustice is taking place inside the court systems. And as a part of the solution, as a researcher and an investigator, and then one to expose corrupt government, Bastet Sheet of City Watchers has chosen to fight with the prisoners as we found that the injustice is coming not through just wrongful convictions, but illegal convictions. And so I deal with, and I do this under the First Amendment protections, the freedom of religion. I deal specifically with Exodus 23:7, where it says that one shall have nothing to do with false charge, and that we should not be putting innocent or honest persons to death, and that the guilty will not be acquitted. And so this is something that I'd like to address right here inside the community to show the wickedness that is going on throughout the United States as it relates to racial disparities in the criminal justice system. I have a young man who has been wrongfully convicted, and he has been sentenced to a lifetime prison sentence for the commission of a crime in which he did not commit. So I will be bringing, raising awareness of what's going on. But what I want to do is just come into racial trauma, and I'd like to talk about racial trauma. Racial trauma is, or race-based trauma, or traumatic stress. It refers to the mental and emotional injury caused by the encounters of racial bias and ethnic discrimination, racism, and hate crimes. I believe that mass incarceration, and God has placed it upon my heart as well as in my mind, in my spirit, to allow me to know that what is happening to young Black men and women and our children, that this is a matter of a hate crime. And I have to raise notice about this. And I don't think that people are taking this stuff very seriously. But in April of 2021, Rochelle P. Walensky, the MD, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, declared that racism is a serious public health threat. And this is what Bastet Cheetah City Watchers is going to be presenting to you guys today. Some stats about Georgia, because this is the case that I'm actually actively working with. But the racism as it relates to the over incarceration of black men and women inside of Georgia. And then just wanted to talk about that, how if anyone has ever been wrongfully or illegally convicted and had to have been timed inside a prison, that, you know, your experience, I'm sure, has been one that has been emotionally painful and is very uncontrollable at times. And I'd like to talk about the interview that I've conducted with the young man in whom I will be sharing the information about, who's been wrongfully convicted, and the story that he's given. But in the United States, black indigenous people of color are most vulnerable due to living under a system of white supremacy. And these are things that I'd like to bring out to the forefront, you know, because America is trying to say that racism does not exist. And as we're dealing with the Black History Month, I'd like people to remember that the Bible tells us that we are to remember the prisoners and put ourselves in the shoes, in their shoes with them. And that, though I'm sure everyone has always heard everybody inside a prison say that they are innocent, you know, I'm sure you've also heard there are a lot of people in prison who said they are innocent and who actually are innocent and who've been deprived of even being proven their innocence. And I'll use Troy Davis as an example. Troy Davis was accused of killing a white police officer in Georgia, Savannah, Georgia, in 1989. He spent from 1989 to 2011 fighting for his case. He had the Vatican and so many other people, Jesse Jackson and other people, coming to fight to prove, and his defense as well, to prove his innocence right before he was wrongfully and brutally and inhumanely executed in September of 2011 by Georgia Commonwealth legislator and the judges who denied his defense to bring forth evidence to show and prove that this man was innocent. So that was a deprivation and a denial of his right to the presumption of innocence. And so I'd just like to, you know, just talk about what I'm bringing forth today is that Georgia, racism is a public health crisis. Not only is it a public health crisis in the United States, it's a public health crisis in Georgia, and that Georgia's health resolution 78, I believe they're trying to pass this resolution to declare racism a public health crisis so that something can be done and for it to be considered a hate crime. And so I'm pushing for all to follow me as I break down what's happening inside of Georgia, what's going on with David R. Johnson, inmate number 1233494, currently being illegally, unlawfully, and unconstitutionally detained at Dodge State Prison. So with that being said, I'll just give a little bit going into case studies about structural racism. Structural racism is a system of mass incarceration, which is perhaps the clearest manifestation of structural racism in the United States, which particularly has damaging effects for black women, men, and sometimes even infants, because the women go inside the prisons being pregnant. It is defined as a system of public policies, institutional practices, and cultural representations and other norms that work in reinforcing ways to perpetuate racial inequality. That is something that I think that we all can identify, whether it is with yourself or you may have experienced a loved one who has been over-sentenced, you know, and sometimes I'm even finding that right now, as we're dealing even with the opioid system, you know, they have criminal drug court systems that were supposed to have been set up, you know, so that people who are using these drugs, instead of them getting penalized and punished, you know, by way of going to a penal institution, you know, that they're supposed to get rehabilitation and have assistance being sought. And I'm finding that there's even racial disparities inside of that, that black children and men and women are not allowed the same opportunities as it even relates to being sentenced fairly when they're using drugs, you know, and we suffer from more from behind more social determinants that even have us even resorting to drugs. But the criminal justice system is perhaps the clearest example of structural racism in the United States. It's really deep. The United States have the highest incarceration rate in the world, and the overwhelming burden of contact with the system has fallen on communities of color, especially African Americans. And so that's something that we have to be aware of. African American adults are 5 times more likely to be in prison than white Americans. And according to data, African Americans are twice as likely as their white counterparts to have a family member imprisoned at some point during their childhood, with the overall incarceration rates being more than 500% higher than they were 40 years ago. So the black millennials and the post millennials are at a greater risk of contact with the system, the criminal justice system, than any previous generation. And these are some things that, you know, we need to take and open our minds and be like, well, how is this so? You know, we do know that the juvenile justice system has just recently been in place, I'd like to say probably into full effect, coming inside of the towards the mid part of the 1990s. But I do know that there's a story that falls behind the development of the juvenile justice systems, in case if you guys have never heard of it. It's called the Georgia Tan story. Georgia Tan is a German lady, I do believe that she is, that ran an orphanage on Poplar Avenue in Memphis, Tennessee, and she sold around 500 blonde-haired, blue-eyed white children, with some African-American children and other minority children. But the beginning of that came about because Georgia had people on payroll. She had mayors on payroll. She had doctors on payroll. She's had her nurses on payrolls, and they ran a pretty good scheme. And so they had a juvenile detention center judge that also was on the payroll, and she was just taking children, and they were selling children through this system. So when we start looking at how and why we have a mass incarceration, I found that it's this 13th Amendment exception clause that is bringing forth and bringing about this way. And so Bastet Shida is here to bring the truth and to show from a legal standpoint that we have protections that people have not been enforcing for us, and that we have to continue this fight for prisoners, black, brown, white, and indifferent. This isn't just necessarily for the blacks, so I do focus on blacks because we are the mass majority. However, I do fight for just the total overall unrighteousness. So I'll give a little brief synopsis about Georgia before going into my case. Georgia, the state of Georgia, has long been condemned for its mass incarceration of African Americans. It has been a decades-long possession of young black men into prison that has decimated communities across the state. The great imbalance still exists. Black people make up nearly a third of Georgia's population and nearly two-thirds of prison population. In 2013, 61.6% of Georgian prisoners were black. 33.7% were white and 4.3% were Hispanic, while the general population in the state that year was 31.4% black, 54.8% white, and 9.2% Hispanic. This information and this data was found on and from the Department of Corrections, United States Census Bureau annual report of 2013. There are profound racial disparities that can be seen across the state's vast system of correctional system. For example, while 32% of Georgians are black, they comprise 62% of the prison population. This is a serious infraction and racial disparity when we don't even make up the bulk of the residential population within the state. Georgia incarcerates black men specifically at a staggering rate. One in every 33 black men is imprisoned by the state. Do note that you're getting statistics about black men because this is what has been given. Because right now, I guess this is so far the study that has been taken. So I haven't done too much to know what the stats is about the black women inside of there. And because also David R. Johnson is a black man. And so this does correlate directly into me fighting for him. So guys, it's not that I'm discriminating in the data. I will be coming with that as well too at some other time. But the Georgia Innocent Project, and I'd like to say that they have been working very adamantly with getting young black men or black men in Georgia exonerated. But they've reported that there are over 2,100 people in Georgia prisons for crimes that they did not commit. The Prison Policy Initiative reported that in 2010, the racial disparity in prison was 2,036 blacks incarcerated per 100,000, as opposed to only 640 white incarcerations per 100,000. That's a significant racial disparity. Once again, this is one of the reasons why, you know, Bastet Cheetah, City Watchers, and myself is asking for you guys to join us in this fight for friend David R. Johnson when we show and prove how he is innocent and how he is one of these young black men that these stats are actually talking about. Georgia has an incarceration rate of 968 persons per 100,000, which is the highest amount in the nation. Going back through the history of Georgia, we all know that Georgia is the KKK hub. Robert E. Lee, I do believe his name, he has been given birth all throughout the city of Savannah, the state of Georgia. So, you know, these are things that I'd like for people to think about as we look into historical facts for black history, you know, and so let's start focusing and paying attention to the things that most people don't talk about, you know, and let us not forget, once again, the prisoners. But according to a 2020 report by the National Registry of Exonerations, official misconduct contributed to 54% of all wrongful convictions, such as the generation of false evidence or concealment of evidence of innocence, which today I'll also be talking about, which is what happened in the case of David R. Johnson, as I have done and conducted my investigation based off the evidence that was submitted by the state of Georgia, which I can now talk about because that case has closed and it is inactive. This young man has thus far been wrongfully spending 16 and a half years of a life sentence inside of jail. So so as we can see that according to the 2020 report by the National Registry of Exonerations, once again, official misconduct contributed to 54% of all wrongful convictions, which is why I focus on corrupt conduct and then how I am going to talk about that we have got to stand on the necks of these government officials because they are public servants. They have a duty under their structure and under social contract to serve to the will of the people. And so I'm fighting for David R. Johnson because it is not his will to spend the rest of his life inside of prison for a crime in which he did not commit. And I will also be showing how there has been a generation of false evidence as well as the concealment of evidence of innocence that the state of Georgia themselves have even said to show and prove that they have the individual. So pursuant to that 2020 report, the leading causes of most wrongful convictions in the United States include causes like police and prosecutorial misconduct. And that's what I am going to be talking about because that is the basis of what is going on with most of the wrongful convictions inside of the United States, but a lot of them that has been recently happening in the state of Georgia with the most recent exoneration happening as recent as December of 2021 by with a young man named Devonia Inman, for lack of proper enunciation, I-N-M-A-N. He was just recently, he spent 23 years inside of prison for a rape that he was supposed to have committed in the Georgia Innocence Project, fought for him and got him out. And so he was just recently released. The state of Georgia's attorney general was trying to fight against this young man's release, even though there had been now new DNA evidence suggesting that there was another individual that was involved and identifying that individual that was involved. So one of the things that I'd like to show is that also is what is happening in our case with Fight Me. I, you know, have found a way to get in to fight alongside with David R. Johnson, the prisoner that's and detained inside of Georgia's prison. So I'm going to show you guys our case and some things that they're trying to do or attempting and saying that I'm not an attorney and things of that nature. So once again, I'm focusing on wrongful convictions, not just being a wrongful conviction. These are illegal convictions, and these are convictions that have taken place as a form of involuntary servitude, and from the way I can see it, as a form of hate crime. And what I'm looking to do is to have us all to stand together as one people, as one nation, you know, as one unit, so that we can end this. This has been going on for far too long. So the 1968 hate crime, this is a federal statute, and they made it a crime to use or threaten to use force or to willfully interfere with any person because of race, color, religion, or national origin, and because the person is participating in a federally protected activity. Okay, so what we all can agree with is that even if we were to identify with the George Floyd case, you know, and how, you know, he was just, you know, brutally murdered in the life, just being squeezed up out of him on live TV, and, you know, all this that we're hearing about the police brutality and everything that's going on, you know, we can identify with this as being a hate crime. And that's what the message that I'd like for us to take away today is that this is a hate crime, and we have to address and deal with this being the racism and an underlying cause of stress, because it's causing stress to me every time I have to think about my children calling me and, you know, saying, "Mom, I done just got pulled over," or, you know, me having to have my own experience with having to go at 2 o'clock in the morning and saving a young child of mine at the age of 18 because he's not knowing that he shouldn't be out in the park at 2 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, a sheriff trying to automatically get the young man for statutory rape when he and the young lady, you know, were not indecent. They did not find anything going wrong going on inside of there, but automatically you know, but as a mother, knowing what they do to our young black men, once I got that call, I was immediately there because I knew what was going to happen. And he sure told me, wow, they were, you know, they had me for statutory rape. And I'm like, you ain't have to tell. Yeah, mama knew what they were going to do. So I had to get my own child, you know, out of some things. So these are some things that we have to, just be abreast with. And, you know, guys, and I'm sure that we all can identify with. And so going into the gut of what I'm here to talk about, I'm here today on behalf of David R. Johnson. David R. Johnson is a 35-year-old black man, young black man, and that's what he identifies himself as. I am sharing his story, and this is a shockumentary of wrongful convictions and why we're fighting to free David R. Johnson and why we must also fight to free other black men, women, and our children who have been illegally and wrongfully convicted in any state prison or federal prison for that matter. But David R. Johnson has shared his story with me, and I'm here to share his story with you guys. David R. Johnson has been spending 16 and a half years inside of prison. David R. Johnson was told on October 3rd of 2005 that he was being taken into a police precinct for questioning. David R. Johnson had some friends, as what, you know, the average young black, you know, man, do they have friends, right? David R. Johnson has never been in any prior trouble. He's never, you know, other than like a traffic ticket, I think that's basically about it. But outside of that, he had never been inside of any trouble. So David R. Johnson and some friends were together at some point in time prior to October 3rd, going back to give you the story. And a friend of his, personal vendetta with an individual, because an individual owed him a few dollars. And so something was going on inside of the friend's mind, and it was a state of mental health issues from what I have been told, because Mr. Johnson said that the young man had never acted like this a day in his life. This day on September 28th of 2005, the young man decided that he wanted to go and make some stuff happen for this debt that was owed to him. And it was a $10 debt. And so he, Mr. Johnson, and a few other people allegedly went to the victim's house, who was living with his uncle. And people have testified that it was a co-defendant along with who has been charged also of the same crime with Mr. Johnson, who came to the house knocking on the door. He was very belligerent, and he had something held behind the back of his hand. So, but on September 28th, an incident happened, and an individual was brutally killed. God rest his, you know, may bless this young man's soul. But there was an individual that was murdered. The police didn't have anyone available at the time because, according to testimony of the victim's family, the victim didn't know the individuals that came to the door, other than one individual by the name of Boo, not a first name, not a last name. He knew no one. So according to the death investigation report, Mr. Johnson's name is not used and things of that nature. So what has happened was Mr. Johnson was 19 years old. A detective came and took Mr. Johnson out of his father's house on October 3rd of 2005 and said that he was going to be taken inside of the precinct for questioning. Mr. Johnson has never seen the streets of Georgia or the outside from that day forth. Mr. Johnson, along with one of the alleged four people that were present at this event when the homicide took place, they have two people for the same murder. Mr. Johnson has been claiming his innocence from day one. He has exhausted every administrative remedy that he has available as a prisoner. So what that means is that he has no other options available to fight for his freedom, because he has filed in 2011, he's filed some things, his defense attorneys have filed on behalf of him. They filed motion in Lamine's to suppress the evidence to get the young man out. That was denied. Mr. Johnson has filed a habeas corpus. That was denied. Mr. Johnson has recently filed, as recent as of October 6th of 2021, before I even got involved inside of this case, he filed a motion to quash his indictment because he learned that the indictment was not returned in open court. And thus far, even right as of today, he has not heard anything from the judge who has this motion in front of him. So Mr. Johnson, you know, he wants his freedom. He wants his freedom, and he wants the world to know, you know, that he has been wrongfully convicted, and I have pulled the evidence and records by way of this being a public records, and as anyone have the right to go and pull these records. And so I pulled the records. I now have what they have used against him, and what I found is that everything had been conducted from a totally illegal standpoint. Under Georgia's law, the indictment was supposed to, and the guilty verdict were supposed to have been returned in open court, and I have evidence to show that the indictment was not even signed by the grand jury. We have a conflict of interest. There's so many different things going on with the case, but the conflict of interest with the assistant grand jury, district attorney, Jerome M. Rothschild Jr., and I don't know if you guys know about that name, the Rothschilds, but that's a serious name that got some serious stuff behind that. But we believe that he and the grand jury, the four person, the grand jury four person were relatives. We are uncertain. However, we are looking to gather that information by way of jury, because we will be pulling certain people in to testify on behalf of that. But the jury didn't bring the guilty verdict in, and they didn't return it inside of open court. They violated his rights to a speedy public jury trial. They denied him of his rights of bail from the date of arrest, and under Georgia's law, he was entitled to have a jury trial or to be in front of a grand jury within 90 days after being arrested. And so he was arrested October 3rd, and according to paperwork, he allegedly, and there's even a discrepancy of the date, because his indictment is signed, not even signed, rather, it just have a date of, one date of like November 3rd, 2006 is when the grand jury found the verdict. But then I just requested records from the recorder's court, and what she submitted to me is that she has a guessing date that it happened November 6th. So there's discrepancies all throughout the whole entire case. But Mr. Johnson, there's evidence inside of an appeal that his co-defendant had also filed. The co-defendant had didn't appeal against the murder charge, and in 2008, that court had said specifically that people had testified that one, the gun was taken out of the hand of one of the four people that was a part of this scene or at the scene allegedly at the time of the murder. So that the gun was taken by a whole nother individual from the police. The police had also reported that the co-defendant that was charged along with Mr. Johnston of this crime, that the co-defendant that spent casings from the gun, my apology, was actually found in the co-defendant's room inside of, I believe, his drawer. So witnesses have testified all throughout the case that, you know, the individual that murdered the young man was the young man that clearly said that he was going to go and shoot the young man, because this is what people have testified, that he was going to go and shoot the dude just on the principle because the dude owed him some money. And then they also testified that the co-defendant said after he shot the dude the first time, the victim, and I'm just using the words that are inside this appeal, but that after he shot him the first time, that he said that he was going to shoot him a second time just to make sure that he was dead. And that is exactly what had happened. That's what he did. So what I'm trying to show the world is this thing right here, the wrongful convictions and the stats that I told you, just what that 2020 report says. According to the 2020 report by the National Registry of Exonerations, the official misconduct contributed to 54% of all wrongful convictions, such as the generation of false evidence or the concealment of evidence of innocence. And that's what the state of Georgia has done. For I don't know how they got David R. Johnson's name. I don't know how, you know, where I don't understand how they got two people for the same murder. Mr. Johnson says that they never fingerprinted him, and I do not have any evidence whatsoever that Mr. Johnson's fingerprints were tested and that the gun came back with Mr. Johnson's fingerprints on it. And so that's what they have done. They have been concealing evidence, and they're stopping Black people from proving their innocence. And this is going on throughout the world. Once again, if you were to look at the Devonia Inman case, that young man that spent 23 years inside of the prison, Georgia's prison, who was just recently exonerated in December of 2021, the same thing goes for him. That young man, that was a murder case as well too. What they've been finding out is that the police have been paying people inside of prisons to say that these people have been saying in prison that they've done something. The same case with Mr. Johnson. The police said that Mr. Johnson somehow or the other told someone inside of prison that he did kill the individual. And that's the only evidence that they actually are using. Johnson out of a lineup. I guess they also picked the co-defendant out of a lineup. So both of them killed the young man. And so Mr. Johnson has no other way of fighting for his freedom. And what we're doing is because he still have his right to liberty. The civil liberty is something that can never be taken away. It can never be taken away. And so he does have an opportunity because in actuality, his whole sentence and his whole judgment and the conviction is just void. It's void. It's null and void, and it actually has no legally binding effect. And that's what we are here to show and prove, that, you know, this is why Black men and women, so far I haven't seen, you know, many women, but I have been seeing a lot of Black men that have been having to be recently exonerated by, you know, several organizations out here that are fighting for the freedom of prisoners. So this is Mr. Johnson's case is one of the same cases. He was falsely accused. He was arrested without a warrant, you know, and that was a violation of his Fourth Amendment rights, and this is what we're fighting for. So we're asking the state of Georgia to come forward now, you know, and bring forth this evidence to show and prove, you know, because they denied and deprived him of his fair chance for a trial. So we're not asking for a new criminal trial. That's not what we're looking for. We're actually looking to have the public, you know, to assist us and to make this a determination on whether or not this young man should be inside of here. And all is the evidence that the state of Georgia, you know, brought forth, you know, was that actually substantiating and was it sufficient evidence to support the crime, in which we know that it was not. Mr. Johnson's case was already shown to be guilty by the Supreme Court, and however, we are still fighting against that because any decision, any rule, any law that is contrary to the Constitution is null and void, and that decision was made in Marbury versus Madison, 1803. So that what it is that we are pushing for, you know, is once again is to show that he has right, not as a prisoner, but he has right as a human being, to show that he did not do what they said it is that he's done. And we have to address what is happening to him and so many other young black, young and old black men, women, and our children. And so with that being said, I'll, you know, end on that note for a second, if I may.
My God, no, I'm here, Miss Rachel. That was a mouthful right there, first of all, and very educational. And this touches home, I'm sure, for a lot of our listeners, as well as myself. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced anyone being charged wrongfully in your family or anyone close to you, but this definitely touches home. And I'm so appreciative of the work that you're doing out in the community, and not just in Wisconsin. This is happening all the way in Georgia. So it stretches throughout the U.S., the breadth of work that you're doing. And so I'm just happy to have you here to bless us with this information. And also share with us some of the ways that how, if anyone out there listening wants to get involved, Rachel, how do they get involved? What do they need to do to learn how to do what you're doing? Because this is great. I'm getting a lot of good feedback and a lot of texts and like follow up from people saying, "Hey, my cousin was wrongfully convicted for 17 years, you know, spent 17 years in jail." Just imagining spending 17 years of your time for something you did not do, man, how that must be affecting not only his mental health, but the mental health of his family, mental health of himself. My God, Rachel. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's something, you know. This young man, you know, he is strengthened. He is strengthened by the grace of God, and you know, as a part of what it is, I also have a ministry, a Truthitarian ministry, that I do focus on, because once again, Proverbs 31:8-9 is why I do what I do. I do believe that we are supposed to open our mouths for the mute, you know, our people would understanding for me with the law, you know, because once you give your life to God, then you're really no longer under the laws of the land and of man. We're not bound And so I've found so many scriptures that just even talks about the lawlessness that actually happened, and that the sin is actually in the law. And that's what I have I've found out is what's happening. You know, the sin is in, it's in the law. It's in those, you know, I think it's Ephesians 6:12 that, you know, talks about that, for we wrestle not, you know, against the flesh and blood, but it's against the principalities of these people in these higher places. You know, when we're dealing with some inhumane issues, you know, where a person can just go and wrongfully and falsely accuse someone, you know, if you guys ever, you know, for those of you that are listening, it's something that touched my heart and soul. And just by way, if Mr. Troy Davis's family is out here listening, please reach out to me, because I want to continue the fight with you, because I did. I heard your family's story. I followed that young man. So, you know, Troy Davis, if your family, if anybody knows Troy Davis' family, I do want to make a connection. And I would ask that they would reach out to me personally, because this is a fight that I want to continue with them as well, too, with following Troy Davis and the last words that he shared with the world before he was executed. You know, and it just touched my heart and my soul, you know, to know that you're getting ready to lose your life for a crime that you didn't commit, you know, and it just hurts my heart and my soul just to know that the judge, and I'll just share with you guys, it was the chief judge of Chatham County Superior Court, Chief Judge Penny Haas Friesman. We're also asking for a recusal of her as well, too. We don't even want her hearing this case. So this is a part of the fight that I'll be, you know, sharing with you guys, that we need your support as well, and too. But nonetheless, she was the judge that chose to deny Troy Davis's defense to bring forth the evidence that would have proven that man's innocent and to save his life from being executed. So if y'all get a chance, you know, just look that story up, you know, Troy Davis, Savannah, Georgia, he's, you know, so I'm fighting for Troy Davis as well, too. You know, I'm fighting for a lot of people. And we have to understand that we have rights that these people are supposed to be protecting for us, and they're not doing it. And, you know, I'm not an attorney. I don't purport to be an attorney. This is my legal disclaimer. I am not one. I don't purport to be one. You know, I am what you call an avid scrivener. You know, the word scrivener is something that was used before they started monopolizing attorneys anyway. Scrivener, yeah. is that's just an individual that just read and write, you know, and that could possibly get paid for services, you know. You know, so they monopolize this attorney stuff, you know, so that they can start using these black codes, as we all are aware of the Jim Crow laws and things that they've set inside of place. So what is going on with this mass incarceration? It's just it's reform slavery, the 13th Amendment.
That's right.
That's, you know. That's what we need to talk about. You know, the 13th Amendment was passed by Congress on January 31st of 1865 and ratified on December 6th of 1865. And it clearly says that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. It says that it shall not exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So what I'm fighting is to show that slavery was never abolished, and they never got rid of involuntary servitude. You know, there used to be such a thing as called peonage in the United States. That used to be a federal law 42 U.S.C. 1984. However, at some point in time, I do believe in maybe the mid-1980s, the federal government repealed this peonage. So, you know, that law no longer exists anymore. You know, it wasn't something that was made publicly known, you know, but they repealed these laws right up underneath our eyes without us even knowing things. And so I'm focusing on we need to get rid of this 13th Amendment, you know. And even if we don't get rid of the 13th Amendment, we need to fight for the people, because then all criminals inside of prison, are they all guilty because they have been duly convicted? Well, we know that that's not the case. That is not the case. David R. Johnson, inmate number 1233494, currently being held illegally, unlawfully, and unconstitutionally by way of kidnap and involuntary servitude under the Georgia Department of Corrections, Dodge State Prison. He was not legally convicted. You know, we have an indictment that was not returned in open court. We have a guilty verdict that was not returned in open court. We also have an indictment that does not even meet all of the criminal elements of the crime. So what does that mean in actuality? David R. Johnson was convicted of malice murder under Georgia's law, OCGA 16-5-1. Certain conditions of malice murder that have to get met. One of those conditions would have to say that he, with a malignant heart, used a deadly weapon to brutally murder someone, right? This indictment does not specify this at all. And the indictment, though you guys can't see it now, but I will be having that indictment, and I do have it posted, some of it, like you can see some of the records on my videos on YouTube, and I'll be uploading the documents on Facebook as well, too. But the indictment, it does not read all of, it doesn't meet all of the necessary elements that it's supposed to meet under Georgia's law. Once again, I am not an attorney. I am not purporting to be an attorney. I'm just reading a law. And under Georgia's law, it says X, Y, and Z. And I compare that X, Y, and Z to what I had in front of me, and I found that it did not meet all of the elements. So then what I went to go and look to see, well, then does this violate any of his rights? Well, yes, it does. Because under Georgia's law, in order for there to be a commission of a crime, there has to be a crime there. So if it doesn't meet all of the essential elements of the crime, then there is no crime. And if there is no crime, then there shouldn't have been a prosecution. So there's a lot of things that have taken place inside of this man's case, you know, and it's just baffling to me, you know, to see how they can allow a prosecuting attorney to bring forth half, not even half of an evidence, because the evidence that they used were photographs of the dead victim's head, which didn't show and prove, like, anything. That's really all that they had on behalf of Mr. Johnson. However, they had fingerprints of the co-defendant. They had spent casings that was found inside of the co-defendant's room. They have the gun that was taken by another individual from the co-defendant, because that individual said that he didn't like what the co-defendant did. And none of it leads to Mr. Johnson. So this 13th Amendment is where this black mass incarceration is coming in at. This is where slavery and involuntary servitude has never been done away with. Because they're being punished for crime, and it's appearing that they were duly convicted, but until you open up that information and open up the pages and read the books, you're finding out that they have not been legally convicted.
That's right.
This is the problem. So that's racism, and that's a public health crisis. This is a public health crisis that we got to address, because this not only impacts David R. Johnson, not only did that impact Troy Davis, God rest his soul, God rest that man's soul. The man died innocent and couldn't prove his innocence. That judge, you've got to have the cruelest heart to not allow an individual to bring forth me from dying. I don't want to die.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to die. I don't want to die.
Destroying people's lives.
That man said, I don't want to die. And we don't think that this is not an issue. Our brothers and sisters and children are spending their lives, too many people. We all got a story. We all can identify. It is going on every day. We have got to fight to free David R. Johnson. We have got to stand together, y'all, as a people. Our babies, we can't. Racism is a public health issue. Illegal conviction is a public health issue. This is causing me some stress, y'all.
Well,
I had to deal through Georgia's laws, okay? This is not easy. I am not a lawyer. I am fighting. I'm going in. If there are any lawyers out here, if you want to help a sister out, reach out, okay? Because
right,
I ain't giving
right.
up.
That's right.
I ain't giving up. I ain't giving up. I'm going in. I am going in because ain't nobody talking about them hating us. I want to know why you hate me so much.
Mm-hmm.
Why y'all hate my son? Why you hate my grandchildren? Why
That's
you
right.
hate David? What did he do? What did he do? So,
That's right.
I'm a little bit emotional right now, y'all.
That's okay.
I'm a little bit emotional,
okay.
y'all, because this is our baby. These are our babies. David is my baby. That's my, you understand what I'm saying? He's my baby. He's my baby. He's somebody else's baby. They all our babies. And y'all, we can't forget about that during Black History Month. We can't. We can no longer sit on the sideline and say, this is what I want. This is what I'm trying to act in a very proactive manner. I am, excuse me, let me take that word back, because it's all about what you say. I ain't trying to do anything.
That's
I am acting on behalf
right.
of those that need help. And you can actively see this on Chatham County Superior Court case search, SPCV 21-00926-KA. That's our active case. Right now, we are awaiting a judge. These are some things
Rachel,
that we're battling
that
with. Yes, ma'am. The case number, you can look the case up on Chatham County Superior Court case search, and it is case number S as in Sam, P as in Paul, C as in cute, V as in victorious, 21-00926-KA.
Thank you for that, Rachel.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. I ask everyone, to pull those public records. You can, you know, if there are any other pro se litigants, listening, you know, that, you know, might be involved to see what it is. I'm also addressing racism inside of the civil tort action claim. I have addressed this being an issue of racism and a hate crime, you know. So right now, once again, we are looking to have a regular judge. It was initially filed in state court, and it was transferred over to Superior Court because state court said that they had limited jurisdiction. And what we found was the first judge that we had ended up having when the case was transferred over, I had to do a motion for recusal and disqualification of her because I did my research and found out that she was the clerk of the trial judge, because we are suing the state of Georgia, the trial judge, the former prosecuting attorney. We're suing his public pretender for, you know, pretending to defend him during that time, as well as the detective that that made the arrest, and the city of Savannah. But I did a recusal for her, and then I ended up doing, we got another judge. So I ended up finding out that there might have been a conflict of interest with this judge because he might have a relationship with the prosecuting attorney. So we have,
Zim's girlfriend today. You've been dropping them.
They done made this one song that I like. I like it real good, and it's called "Get It Back in Blood."
Get it back in blood.
You listen. Don't make me do it. You know.
Talk about that trauma. Y'all better get with it.
And we need to get it back in blood. That's what time it is. You know. And I ain't talking about losing somebody's blood, but holding people accountable. You know, because for some odd reason they believe that they don't bleed blood the same way we do.
Oh, they do.
And and they do. But what we found was that here's something that's going to be very, very interesting. There are 9 judges inside of this place. And out of 9 judges, there are only 8, I mean 1, that can actually hear this case. What we have found, what I have found, and my investigative team, I do have an investigative team that also works with me, but what we have found was that not only is it that we believe the assistant district attorney that worked on John Brother Johnson's case, you know, would help him to convict him, not only do we think that there's a conflict of interest there between him and the grand jury foreperson being in relations, but what we found was that most of these people are affiliated with a serious topic right now that has actually just gotten Whoopi Goldberg inside of some trouble.
Do tell.
I ain't the one to tell, but I'm going to bring the tea.
Okay.
Because, see, Whoopi Goldberg and Nick Cannon, they paid by them folks, and I'm not. So what I have discovered, okay, is that every judge that don't look like us inside of there may be affiliated with some Jewish federations. My God. I want that rabbi. Yeah, y'all, somebody, if y'all know that rabbi, tell him to holler at me. I want to have a conversation, because he wouldn't have a conversation with Farrakhan. So maybe he'll have a conversation with me. I'm just a little bitty old layman. Not to start anything. I'm not a racist, but I got to keep it real, right? So what I did was did some history on the state of Georgia, the city of Savannah. So from a historical standpoint, Savannah was taken over by the Jews. And they have what is called municipal slavery, in which you can find on the city of Savannah's website right now if you were to go to see that. That I ain't never seen that right there. When I said municipal slavery, well, what the heck? Oh, they bragging about it. They bragging about the municipal slavery in the state of Georgia, the city of Savannah. Savannah is a big time. They played big time in the Atlantic slave trade. Yes, they did. Yes, they did. They've been enslaving black folks up there inside of Georgia from the beginning. And in fact, when they first created their courts in the 1800s, their courts were created, and it was called the Lower Court for Negroes. The Lower Court for Negroes, just a little bit of black history facts. The Lower Court for Negroes, and behind every black person that had to go to court inside of the city of Savannah courthouse, their name, behind each one of their names, was the word slave in parentheses. Savannah, Georgia is the hub of all racial disparities and the beginning of all racial inequities, inequalities, and that is the beginning of the hate crime. The city of Savannah and Savannah's government have got to be held responsible for what they have been doing to our people. That's it. They have got to be held responsible for what they have been doing to our people. They have been using these court systems to intentionally enslave people. And they've been doing it since the 1800s. They've been doing it since the 1800s. And they've done that. They've done it, and everybody is aware. So what they're trying to do, I've had the city of Savannah attorney try to say that I'm not an attorney and that I can't assist Brother Davis. I am fighting for this one last judge to hear this matter because we are refusing everyone under the basis of we believe that all those other people hate us and that we will not get justice. But not only on top of that, one of the other judges is also the same judge who's been having this young man's motion to quash his indictment since October, and he has not heard absolutely anything from this judge. They are taking advantage of prisoners. They are not respecting their rights. They are not doing anything, even though they know that these individuals are innocent. This is a cruel, 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 and inhumane political system. And racism is a public health crisis. And y'all, I'm stressing out. I'm stressing out. And I just need somebody to help me with my stress because I need to know if anybody else is experiencing what I'm experiencing. But David R. Johnson, inmate number 1233494, he's also stressing out, but he's making it and he's doing the best that he can because he now has hope because somebody is trying to help him fight for his freedom. He has hope because he believes that he's getting ready to be free now. We have hope because we can't look on the sidelines no longer for this stuff. People are talking about conspiracy theories and all of this. I'm here to tell you there is no such thing as a conspiracy theory. There is such a everything as a conspiracy fact. And the fact of the matter is that conspiracy is a federal crime under 18 U.S.C. 241. And it's a civil crime under 42 U.S.C. 1985, Section 3. That crime.
Everywhere.
Say that they're violating it. In
violating our rights in every way, and it's because of the lack of knowledge of what the law is. I hear you saying over and over again, Sister Rachel, you're not an attorney. But see, we don't have to be an attorney to know the law. We don't have to be an attorney to know the law, and we don't have to be an attorney to hold those accountable. And
yes.
I'm sure this has been a lifelong battle for you, resting your case for the knowledge that you have. You didn't need a piece of paper to know how to read and write. That's what you started this. I'm a scriber. I know how to read and write and comprehend. And I know that this contradicts the policy. And I also know now the law contradicts our rights. We have, this is definitely a conversation that has to be talked about. And I want to remind you, Sister Rachel, we have about 20 minutes left. And I just want to quickly ask you this question before I open the lines to ask anybody else if they have any questions. I'm going to tell you right now, hands down, Sister Rachel, we're going to have to come back here next month and we're going to have to revisit this subject, because all of the information that you guys need to know on this topic, it's no shape, form, or fashion that I can give it to you in a two-hour chunk. I'm going to be real with you. But we're going to keep this conversation going into the next month, because this is very, very vital. This is so important to our structure, to our understanding. Sister Rachel, with all
yes,
of this
ma'am.
Work that you've been doing, can you share with our viewers how safe or unsafe this path has been for you? Has anyone tried to harm you because of what you know and how you go about getting the word out?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I had an attempt. I was filing habeas corpus on behalf of people in Wisconsin 4 years ago, and I had an attempt of government to physically come and harm. I had people that were showing up in unmarked cars and plain clothes, going to places that I didn't even know that they could be aware of finding me or even associating me with. So that I had. In this attempt here, I can tell you that at the beginning, I did let the courts know that I, because of the nature of the situation, that I do fear for my life right now. So I did not disclose my my address physically to the courts. And this is something that these attorneys are just constantly pushing for now, you know, with saying that I have not disclosed my my address, and they've been continuously asking for it. So, yes, I have previously had to happen. I've been filing these things before. And for right now, I have not disclosed anything to the people. I'm just telling them that they can communicate to me via email. I do fear for my life. I do fear for Mr. Johnson's life as well, too. There was also a retaliation that had taken place on Mr. Johnson. When we first filed this, they went and took him and put him inside of a hole in Telfair State Prison, where he was actually detained without knowing what he had did. And so he was in there, and we hadn't heard from him in quite some time. And then I had filed an inhumane treatment petition and filed it upon the governor of Georgia, Governor Brian Kemp, who's aware of what's going on, as well as the Department of Corrections. Timothy C. Ward, he is the commissioner. So I did tell them that I had did my research and found that under Georgia's Department of Corrections Standard of Operating Procedures that Mr. Johnson was supposed to have been provided with notice of what it is that he did to get such a sanction, and so that I found that there had been a violation and that they had 24 hours to bring him back into general population. However, they have now moved him from maximum security to medium security. They did not return anything back to me, but I did know and get they did get my message because they moved him the very next day within those 24 hours. They took him out of solitary confinement.
Oh, I'm here, sister. I'm here. And I'm sorry you had to experience that, but that's the plight we have to look forward to when you are going against the grain. And I really want to just quickly bring in the other part of this, which is the programming. You know, we're so programmed to meet our basic needs that we don't really have the opportunity to reach outside of what knowledge or information is being shared with you. So I always challenge you guys to do your research, to educate yourself. They always say if you want to keep something from you, they're going to put it in a book. Take the time to read the fine print, because in the fine print you will find what has been attempted to be hidden. Now, when you listen to this playback later on today, I want you to let what I just said and what Sister Rachel has shared with you guys to seep in the cracks and crevices of your mind and challenge what you see, what is happening around you, because we are so quickly profiled. When somebody is, oh, it's a black man, and they about 5'9", And that's what you get for the description. So everybody that's black now fits that description. And now you're guilty because you're black and because the program and the belief is that black is whack, black is bad, black is not good, black ain't right. Black is beautiful, black is great, black is grand, black is fantastic, black is everything. That's where we have to change the narrative, and we have to support one another, show up for one another. I appreciate Sister Rachel for the work she's doing to show up for these men. Can you imagine being in solitary confinement, losing your mind, knowing you didn't do something and you're constantly being accused of the crime? Come on, sisters, and if you don't know what that looks like because you've never been in jail or you haven't been connected to that, then let's think about the sisters that's out there in verbal abusive relationships and domestic violence relationships and, hell, everything that you have to face when you walk out the door as a black woman and how hard it is to take that gasping deep breath just before you step out into the world to put on your mask and show up and do your damn job. You understand what I'm saying? We all have a duty to this. Sister Rachel, I'm going to open up the lines because we got about less than 15 minutes left, and I want to see if any of the sisters on the line have any questions for you or any feedback. Hey, ladies, how y'all doing? I'm so happy you've been so patient on today's show. This has been a blessing to us. Does anyone have anything they want to ask Sister Rachel or comment on? Your lines are open. No, y'all breath, y'all speechless, y'all rendered speechless today. I know this was deep.
Hey, can y'all hear
Hello.
Me?
I want to say I thank her for bringing all that information out. Right here in Milwaukee, when Judge Serafin was in, he was giving people 100 years, 99, over the amount that it took. And my son had murdered an Iranian, and anyway, he's supposed to get out. I fought, and he actually got out. And I don't want to say over the radio, over the phone, because someone may be listening. The person who actually helped him get out was fired. Anyway, I know that these things are wrong, and I know Lena Taylor laid a lead to see to help people get out. This has been over 14 years ago, and a lot of them couldn't get out because of the sentences were given was so long. I'm saying this, that the law, we really need to fight the law. That 13, that Amendment 13 is so wrong. We're all considered criminals when we step out the door and we step in front of them, no matter what. So what I'm saying is that we need to fight to get people in office to rescind, get rid of those laws so that people could quit acting on them. Because when I was working with juveniles at the prison, and for 4 years, I went through the records, and there was over 900 black, well, Hispanic youth, males, and they all had not one had graduated. I seen what was happening at the boys' prison, or they were not giving them the schooling that they need. And when they get out, they couldn't get a job. Then that conveyor belt rolled them right back in there because of no education, having a job. There's so much wrong. And I'm glad to see that you're fighting. But we politically, we need to start there so that they can stop it. And thank you very much for doing what you're doing. And I'm with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing, Lucille. What I can tell you, Sister Rachel, is Lucille is an ally. Lucille has done a lot of work out here in the community and doing a lot of restorative justice work. So I'm so grateful to have you both on the line, so very knowledgeable on this issue. It's been a blessing. It's been a blessing. Does anyone else on the line want to share any feedback or comments to Miss Rachel?
Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yes. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm good. This is Janae. I just wanted to chime in. First and foremost, I just want to tip my hat to Miss Rachel. She has been amazing. It's been a pleasure working with you in this situation and this case and, you know, with just everything as far as the injustice and everything that we've been going through in our community, as well as, you know, fighting for Brother David. You know, it's just been a huge eye-open, you know, to me to see how much of injustice and how much racism has still been taking place in our United States. You know, it's terrible. But, man, it's just been a pleasure, Miss Rachel. I appreciate everything that you have been doing for us and everybody, you know, around us and stuff as well. I just wanted to chime in, though, because I know I've been sitting here listening. But if you guys don't know who I am, I'm Janae. I know I'm listed on the flyer as a advocate, a prison reform advocate as well. So I'm actually helping in a fight to free David Johnson as well with Sister Rachel here that's on the line. So I just wanted to chime in and give you guys some information on how you guys can partner in and join and help this situation. We did create a petition for him. So if you guys can go ahead and sign that. I know Black Sister Talk, they will be sharing that link on their platform. So you guys can go ahead and do sign that. We also do, if you guys are looking to place a donation in this fight to help him as well, we did create a Cash App for him. That Cash App is $FreeOrJusticeForDJ16. Again, that's $JusticeForDJ16. We also created a GoFundMe. That link will be posted on Black Sister Talk's platform as well, so you guys can find that there. And then also, too, if you guys want to continue to keep partnering with us, you can always follow us on social media as well. Black Sister Talk, they will post our social media platforms on their site as well. Mine is, though, on Instagram is JS Credit Specialist, and also on Facebook, JS Credit Specialist, and Facebook, the personal I'll post on there as well consistently is Janae Sampson. So I just want to give it back to you guys. I just wanted to share that. And then also, too, if anybody else is on the line that has experienced this, definitely start to speak up, speak out, because we can't do this alone. It can be anybody that is going through this right now. You know, it can be your father, your friend, your cousin, your brother, you know, your sister, not even just men. You know, women are going through this as well. And not just, you know, just this topic. It's happening in all different forms. So I just appreciate everybody that has their ears open right now. But right now it's time to take action. So I'll give it back to you guys.
Oh, I love you. I love you so much, Janae. That's my baby cousin, you guys, and it just warms my heart to hear her voice, but also to see that she is out here doing the work that, you know, we're doing. I've been a great example, I would say, to my younger cousins, and it's just a blessing to see that what I've been doing has not fell on deaf ears, and they've taken action. So I love you, Janae, and I want you to keep up the great work. And Miss Rachel is such a great teacher, so you're learning from one of the best. And since we on here talking about family, I got my other cousin on the line from the Just Tiff Show from Chicago. I want her to chime in quickly as well, because I know this is a subject that is near and dear to our family in other ways. So, Tiff, are you on the line? How you doing, cousin?
Hi, cousin. I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for allowing me to be here on your platform today with you guys. Always great information being shared. Miss Rachel, phenomenal. Janae, I just want to shout out to you as well. But Miss Rachel, you shared so much information. And as Awanda was saying, you're saying that you're not a lawyer, but you have just armed us with so much information, and also was a good reminder of why we should ourselves do our own due diligence and familiarize ourselves with these different laws. Because if we don't know, they will use what we don't know against us, which has been done even in our own family, like Wanda said. We had a cousin who served 17 years here in the state of Illinois for a wrongful conviction and murder. And he was just, after serving his time, he continued to fight with a legal aid help team here in Chicago who worked with people who were wrongfully convicted. And with their help, after about 3 or 4 years of fighting and litigation back and forth, they did get the case exonerated. You know, he was exonerated, and he got his, you know, name cleared, and they got an $8 million lawsuit. But as Awanda was saying, that the money does not take up with the time we lost relatives during that time.
Absolutely.
So, you know, these people will take that their power and use it in malicious ways, you know, and if we're not sticking together, signing petitions, setting up for each other, you know, they'll continue to do this to us. It's imperative that we learn the power of unity. So I just want to share
sister.
That.
The power of unity.
Yes. So I commend you ladies, and Wanda, you are doing a fantastic job. I love to show up here week after week and just hear the different content that you share with us here on your platform. So I love it. Keep doing a fantastic job, and thank you so much for allowing me to share with you guys on today.
Thank you.
I love you, cousin. I love you
thank
so much,
you.
And thank you for sharing that, because there is some light at the end of the tunnel, and you said a key word, unity. There is no competition. We are all great. We are all the shit, okay? We are melanated people. We are multifaceted Black women, and I want to lift you up. I want to build that confidence, because we need confidence right now to do this work.
Yes.
We can't walk in this with doubt. We got to walk in this thing and say, I know who I am.
Yes,
and I am who I am, and I know the law, and this is not acceptable.
Yes.
And it's not acceptable because of this, this, and this, and stand on that. Can you imagine if you remember that Million Man March? If a million men could march that day, right, a million of us could show up and do what we need to do and stand up for each other when something ain't right. We got to say something. We got to show up. You show up to that courthouse with all these Black people, they ain't going to have no choice but to change what they're doing.
Yes.
The power that we have. We have the power in numbers. We have the power in dollars.
we got to stand up for something because we're falling for everything out here.
Yes, yes, yes.
Sister Rachel, we got about 2 minutes left. I want you to tell folks how they can get in contact with you. Let them know where your YouTube channel name is, your Instagram name. Give them that info. I'm going to give it to them on the social media platform, but some of these people not following Black Sister Talk on Instagram. So if you're listening, go ahead and hit the like button, the follow button on Instagram and Facebook so you can get this information if you don't get it when she says it now. Go ahead, Ms. Rachel.
And share, share, share. First and foremost, I'd like to say thank you, sister, for inviting Bastet C to City Watchers, Channel 7 Black News, where the revolution will be televised, and JNS credit specialist on your show. Thank you very kindly for opening up your platform. You guys can find Bastet C the City Watchers, once again, Channel 7 Black News on YouTube. And that's where I'm at, Bastet City Watchers, and it's Black News, Bastet City Watchers, Black News on YouTube. And then on Facebook, it is Bastet City Watchers, and I think it's Shafira Sankofa connected to it. I'm not really sure. I don't know how to really name this stuff, but you can find Bastet City Watchers. I do know
right.
for certain. So that's on Facebook. And on YouTube, and you'll be able to follow me, and please go and like and share and subscribe. And if you know anybody that is inside of the prison right now that even needs to have an extended support system, I'm working up a program. I'm working up a program, so please go and check out Bastet City Watchers Black News on YouTube. Thank you very
wonderful.
Kindly, Sister LaWanda. And thank you, Sister
wonderful,
Janae, for
wonderful.
Being such a great sponsor.
Oh, my God. I'm just so blessed. I'm so blessed that we were able to have this conversation today. You guys know the name of the show, Black Sister Talk, Where You Can Breathe. We'll be here next Saturday, same time, 3 to 5 p.m. Central Time, and we'll be having our Sensual Saturday. Be safe. And God bless.